ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Nightlife History.
Today is Remembrance Day, Armistice Day, when at 11 a.m. on the 11th of November 1918, the guns finally fell silent and World War I, the Great War, was over. There were numerous theatres of war, of course, where Australians had fought, including the Southwest Pacific, the Middle East and Mesopotamia, Gallipoli, as well as those serving in the Navy and Australian Flying Corps. But over 295,000 Australians served on the most important battleground, the Western Front in Belgium and France, between March 1916 and November 1918. Australian service people fought in each of the major British campaigns with names that became familiar in households across Australia, many still on street signs across the nation: Fromelles, the Somme, Bullecourt, Passchendaele, Villers-Bretonneux, Hamel, Amiens, and the list goes on. And as we remember, over 46,000 Australians lost their lives on the Western Front. Over 130,000 were wounded. There were many individual histories written, but few have told what happened through the eyes of individual soldiers, both diggers and the Germans. Philip Bradley is a leading military historian and author whose approach is to dig into the diaries and letters and memoirs and other personal accounts of the combatants. And his latest epic book, which completes a trilogy on the First World War, is titled Inferno, Australians on the Western Front. And it recounts the battles from the soldiers' viewpoints. It's rich in first-hand historical detail, much of which has been uncovered for the first time. And Philip joins us this evening. Philip, good evening to you. Welcome to Nightlife.
Thanks very much, Philip.
Terrific to have you with us as well. This book's a result of a huge amount of research, over 500 collections of diaries and letters and memoirs and interviews were used for the book. How did you go about gathering and assembling these sources?
I've actually been interested in the topics since the first time I went to the Western Front, which was in 1981, and then in the 1990s as the veterans of that conflict was slowly dying out, and I remember every Anzac Day they would publish in the paper the remaining veterans, and I thought, gee, I should do something in this area, and I interviewed a couple of them at the time, just in their last years, but I also started going to the War Memorial in Canberra and seeing what a rich resource they had down there, so I started copying, having copied various diaries and such at that time. So my interest has probably started in the 80s, but started researching in the 90s, yeah, so it's been a while.
Mm. It was a different way of writing about the battles, wasn't it? I mean, traditionally, of course, you know, there were official histories and so on, and we'll get to Charles Bean in a moment, but the idea of writing from the viewpoint of ordinary soldiers in the trenches was a thing that came later, after the war, long after, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, Charles Bean particularly did a lot to get that approach going, but there were certainly a lot of men who had never told their stories, but because they'd written diaries and letters throughout the war, they had a lot of time to do that, and memoirs after the war. They were still there, but generally unpublished. So there is a rich vein of resource, as I say, not just in the Australian War Memorial, but most of the state library collections also have a good collection of World War One material as well.
Mm. They're very personal, aren't they? Very first-hand. What surprised you or even shocked you about them?
Oh, I think that the... not so much shocked about it. I sort of expected that things would be, you know, it talks about war, obviously, but a lot of them, you can just see how close they are to their families, writing to them or writing in their diaries about what's happening. There's a lot of stuff hidden, but then there's other ones that are very open in what they say. The diaries in the First World War, unlike the Second World War, were pretty much went uncensored. So, you really get the feel of it from the soldier's point of view, and I discovered a lot of things I had no idea about, tried to weave that into a book, into context of the battles that they took part in.
Yeah, I remember uncovering an old suitcase of my in my father's garage when we were packing up his house when he was in his later years, and discovered a diary that my grandfather, his father, had kept, well, he had with him, I should say, at Gallipoli. And in it were some notes. I mean, some of them, to me at the time, quite shocking, including a goodbye note that he'd written to his sister in the... Now, my family are not the most loquacious lot. I don't know where I came from, Philip, but they... And he didn't say anything else much in the diary. And I asked about it, and I was told by some military historians that, in a sense, they were encouraged to do this to some degree so that there would be something to give to the family. That fact itself I found particularly poignant. You must have come across that sort of thing all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of the families where there's a lot of written diaries which are hard to decipher, and some families, a family member will get hold of them and transcribe them onto a computer and then print them out as a memoir, which is presented to the War Memorial. So those accounts are always very moving because there's usually photos included as well and a comment on their later life and that type of thing. So they are very personal, and feel very privileged to have had the opportunity to work with those type of documents.
And you found, I would imagine, that a lot of what you were reading differed from the accepted understanding of battles that had been.
I think the battle, like it, if you read the official history, it sort of tells you what happened. So you're just seeing one part of it, one little cog in the big wheel. So, and all those little cogs are working together. So though a battle might be successful on a small scale, it might be unsuccessful or the other way around. So you certainly get a lot of surprises. And I was surprised at the different... things that particularly those men who are like artillerymen or signalers in the rear or engineers or transport drivers, these type of guys who had time to write their diaries and keep them in relative safety, whereas a lot of men who are in the front line, of course, never survived and their diaries went with them in many cases. So though we do have some good frontline sources, I found a lot of the rear area sources also very interesting.
Mm. You looked into German accounts too. Eric Maria Remarque's All Quiet on the Western Front is probably a book that many remember as being one of the books that changed our attitudes about what it was like for Germans in the trenches. What did you find when you looked at the German accounts?
There were a number of ways to get German accounts. Charles Bean did quite a bit of work with the German accounts as well, so there's a bit in his diaries and notebooks about German prisoners of war, for example, their attitudes at the time, and then later did work with that. But particularly there's a guy called, a British author called Jack Sheldon, who's done a lot of work in the German archives. He obviously speaks German, and he's written, he's gathered together similar to the project I've done, but from the German side. So I've got a number of those accounts in the book, and you can see that the Germans were under the same pressures, under the same... difficult conditions that the Australians were throughout the battles, and suffered accordingly. I think that's important. You've got to have both sides of the hill. I've done that with my previous books, where I've talked about the Australians and the Japanese in New Guinea, for example, fighting. It's the same on the Western Front. You need to see the other side as well as the Australian side.
Yeah, it was hell. Much of what became the accepted understanding of Australia's involvement in World War One was down to official historian Sir Charles Bean. Now, you obviously looked at his diaries and notebooks again too. How did you find that?
Yeah, well, I'd worked with Charles Bean's diaries for the Gallipoli book I did for the centenary 10 years ago, and got permission through his family to work with those at the time. And I just found his diary accounts very interesting, and his own experiences, rather than in terms of what he used in the official history. I was looking at his own experiences. He was much too modest a man to write about his own experiences in the war compared to what was happening to these soldiers that he was writing about. But he had some extremely, he went up to the front line, and, he took the same chances as they did in terms of the artillery fire, and that was the main cause of the casualties during the war. So basically went into the inferno on quite a number of occasions for the battles. So I wanted to get that side of it from his side. And it's particularly one passage which comes across. He was the official war correspondent, went over there in, so he was on the Western Front from the start of it after Gallipoli, he went to the Western Front and served there till the end as a war correspondent. And he had a friend who he was at a place called Mokay Farm, which is near Pozieres, and this was right in the midst of the Somme battle. And he went into a headquarters dugout of the 12th Battalion, and a fellow said, "Hello, Charlie." And it was his mate Leo Butler from Hobart, who he knew well. Big lad who he always looked up to, and he said I'll see you in a day or two. We're coming over the line anyway. So Charles Bean went over the line, and he found out the next day that he'd had his leg taken off by a shell, and then he died of his wounds. And he just wrote a very simple. He went to his funeral where they buried him in the cemetery, and he said the coffin was laid in the ground in the sun, around the sunlight yellow cornfields. And he said, "I couldn't help wondering whether it was worth it." And that, to me, tells you a lot about, he was dealing with all this, but he was also having his own issues.
Yeah, there are so many accounts, but let's just get a few, some Australian soldier stories that particularly piqued your interest. In particular, two men, George Mitchell and Ray Bishop. George at Bullecourt Messines and the Ypres salient. Come on, tell us about them.
Yeah, so George Mitchell was an interesting character. He's a frontline soldier who went through Gallipoli and then the Western Front and survived the war. Very few men did that, and then also kept an extensive diary throughout the war, which survived as well. So he was from South Australia, from country South Australia, and he was with the 10th Battalion, one of the South Australian battalions at Gallipoli. Now, after Gallipoli, when they all went back to Egypt, they expanded the AIF to five divisions. So the 1st and 2nd Division, so 10th Battalion was part of the 1st Division, so the battalions were split, and basically they formed a new division from each division that was there. So he ended up with the 48th Battalion, which was also a South Australian battalion. And then his first real action on the Western Front was as a Lewis gunner at Bullecourt. And Bullecourt was a tough battle. This is in early April 1917. And he was out on the left flank when they got cut off. And he had two of the men who loaded his Lewis gun for him killed alongside him. But he survived, and he actually walked out with his Lewis gun on his shoulder as the Germans were firing at them as they got out. Anyway, and he was only a private at the time, and his commander, Ray Lean, who was the head of the battalion, he saw him, and he said, "I want to see that man." He called him over, and he was promoted from a private to a lieutenant in one hit, because he lost so many men there. I mean, he lost basically three quarters of the battalion in that battle. So from then on, he was a platoon commander. So he was a lieutenant at Messines in the next battle, which he called a swirling hell of flame and steel. And then in 1918, early 1918, when the Germans broke through in the German offensive, he was sent into with his battalion to try to stop that German offensive at a place called Dernancourt, just near Albert, on the former Somme front, which they'd taken in 1916, and now the Germans had taken that ground back. And they stopped him, and he talked of the grey mobs on our front wavered and broke at 100 yards under the Australian fire. This was on the 28th of March 1918. But the Germans came on again, and on 5th of April there was another attack. And he had to move the line around because the Germans got around behind them. But they held the line, and he said the German regiments were fought to a standstill. So he was, one of the rare qualities of a frontline soldier who survived the war. And he actually also served in the Second World War up in Papua New Guinea running a landing craft unit. So.
Did he die in bed at his home? I hope so.
Yeah, he certainly survived the war. So that was one guy that particularly took my interest.
What about Ray Bishop?
So Ray Bishop was a gunner. So again, I say the gunners had some amazing war diaries. So Ray Bishop was with 2nd Division with the 16th Field Artillery Battery. So he was at he was from Ballarat, 20-year-old from Ballarat. So he was at Pozieres. It was his first battle with the artillery. So as he said, day and night, the earth, air and sky trembled. And he talked of an English soldier who was nearby, who was hit by a shell fragment. And he said he was screaming. And then like a child, he was just calling for his mummy. And he said, so he wrote at the end, so he died. And he said, poor English lad, poor mummy. I hope she'd never know. Mm. And so he really had a way with words. how he wrote. Mm. Then he went to Messines, where three of his guns from the battery were hit, and the men had to throw water on the ammunition to prevent it exploding, and he was awarded a military medal for during that attack. I'm just going to read a little bit out from when he was in Ypres, because he's talking about the animals, because the animals obviously served the guns. They had to pull the guns around. They couldn't do anything without them. So here he's talking. He's saying, "We loaded at speed under the urgent pressure of drivers and restive horses," Ray Bishop wrote. "These fine animals, like men, become partly accustomed to shellfire, noise, the sight and smell of new dead, human and equine, but they liked it no more than we."
Well, yeah, exactly right. Look, I mean, it's worth, before you go, talking with Philip Bradley, the author of Inferno, Australians on the Western Front, a remarkable and comprehensive book which comprises research and examination of diaries and letters and memoirs from over 500 collections. Tell us about, on this Remembrance Day, tell us about Charlie Mance, who returned to Australia and became one of Australia's last Western Front veterans. But like so many, he was asked about conditions in the trenches. Tell us about Charlie.
Yeah, so Charlie was, he was, as you say, one of the last veterans to be alive. So when he was asked about the by a journalist about the conditions, you know, he started talking about the mud and the lice and the boils, the rats and the stench and the gas and everything else. And then he just suddenly stopped talking. And he said to the interviewer, he said, "Sorry, I can't talk about it. I don't want to memorise it, but I've never been able to forget it."
Mm-hmm. Lest we forget, hey?
That's right.
Lest we forget. Philip, been terrific to talk with you. I really appreciate it. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you too, Philip.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.